Kaplan. Welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we talk about spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 13, Creativity. Today, we'll discuss the difference between art and spiritual creativity. I'll raise some controversy about whether knitting is creative. We'll talk about being stuck in our own lives when it comes to decision making. We hear from you. And of course, there's a surprise ending. First, I want to read to you from The Invisible Garment, the working definition of creativity as a spiritual principle. Creativity is the mental ability to go beyond the information or empirical data that is overtly present in a situation. It is the ability to juxtapose ideas, forms, and matter in ways that result in new expressions or new frequencies. Human creativity is unique because it results from the vast development of personal imagination that no other species possesses. Remember, the spiritual definitions of these principles, of these words, is slightly different from the conventional and mundane use of them. In a more conventional use, creativity is about the process of doing or manifesting something unique, ranging from simple problem solving to setting the tables for a Martha Stewart style party to creating artistic pieces. In a spiritual sense, there's a deeper aspect to creativity. The result of spiritual creativity contains a newness, a freshness, a something that's never existed before, or a frequency that inspires a new kind of thinking. Creativity in the spiritual sense cracks an old paradigm. Back in my day, in the last millennium, back in the 60s and 70s, many new philosophers and new philosophies emerged, and they inspired spiritual creativity. Buckminster Fuller in the realm of architecture, Timothy Leary and Ram Dass in the realm of consciousness expansion, to name a few. But my favorite was Marshall McLuhan because he was something like an instinctual prophet. He could see what our future was doing to consciousness. He spoke about a phrase he called integral resonance as the source of civilization. Integral resonance is an important ingredient in the expression of spiritual creativity. So to discuss integral resonance, let's start with trying to separate the visual, or that which is seen by the eye, from what is perceived by the mind. In other words, one sees something, but one's interpretation, the brain's interpretation of what one sees, is separate from the actual visual image. Think of reading. You see letters. You make connections in your brain that are completely different from the actual visual of the printed letter. Words, sentences, ideas, concepts, all that is the integral work of the brain, inspired by the combination of letters that you see with your eye. So what Marshall McLuhan was talking about when he called this the source of civilization, is that as groups in our cultures, we create a unified integral resonance. We sort of teach each other how to think about the things that we see. Creativity is like this. As the artist, if the spiritual principle of creativity is at work through you, you put objects, ideas, letters, storylines, images together in a new, outside-the-box way, but you have little control over the integral resonance that it evokes in anyone else. Your goal is to create a resonance, not to control it. These spiritual principles that I talk about build on, or more accurately, interweave with each other. In my last podcast, I spoke of the flowering new brain system. I spoke of how we form synapses in our head brains, which become myelinated structures after a series of reinforcements. Remember, I spoke about the dog bite, and if as a child you get bitten by a dog, you might create a synapse that says, oh, dogs bite. And if that happens again and again and again, you'll create a myelinated structure, a belief pattern that says, all dogs bite. It makes me think of my little great niece, Ellen, who I think she was about 3 the first time she came and met my dog, Ginger, who did bite her. She then began to call Ginger, ouch, Ginger. And Ginger has been known since that day as Ouch Ginger because it created a little pattern in Ellen's brain that dogs bite. Hopefully, it hasn't been reinforced since then and not all dogs bite, or maybe just only dachshunds bite, or maybe just only Ginger bites. But you get the point of what I'm trying to say. Then I also spoke of the heart mind, which vibrates with the earth's frequency and functions as a regulator for how we interpret the world around us, as well as the world inside us. In other words, our interpretations may vary according to our awareness of our connection with the earth. So those of us who live in earthquake territory may find that we are agitated for several days before an earthquake, and we'll attribute that agitation to all kinds of external stresses or internal stresses even, until the quake rattles our bones and we say, oh, duh, I always forget that my body knows more than I think it knows. That's the heart mind at work. Well, the principle of creativity relies on that kind of heart mind work. That flowering principle is involved in the creativity principle, but it goes a step further. Creativity inspires us to forge a visual or verbal form that evokes the heart-mind regulator in anyone, including the artist, who witnesses that form. If you look at a painting or a photograph and have a response to it, and if that response is authentic, it's not a reasoned, rational response, but instead one that comes from a heart-mind perspective. Like looking at letters on a page, turning them into words, sentences, and ideas. True creativity allows, indeed inspires you to experience far more than is literally there. In addition to the interweaving of the principle of flowering, creativity also interweaves with memory. When we create something, we pull from past experience. Think about how amazing our brains are that they can pull from experience of the distant past as well as experiences that occurred only seconds ago. An artist is, in the now, putting together experiences from all time periods of life, but putting them together in a way that has not been done before. So an artist is creating a future. Cosmologist Brian Swim calls this deep time. We generally think of time as a horizontal past, present, future thing, but when creativity is in charge, time becomes vertical. Past, present, and future are all in this moment, telling their tales, weaving this moment into the fabric of life. We're always being informed by past experience. Creativity is the principle that relies on a mysterious brain mechanism that collapses time in order to influence our decisions in this moment. And creativity also relies on chaos, on randomness, another spiritual principle. You have to be out of your mind, in other words, in order to create real newness, in order for a frequency to emerge that is not a part of your past, but is instead something completely new. All of the stuckness in your past has to be temporarily rattled and eradicated, which is the job of randomness. Spiritual creativity requires deep understanding of metaphor. It requires that you give things a name that actually belongs to something else in order to make those connections in the brain. Not only do we name a new form something other than what it is, but we assign it a whole network of analogies. We ask the artist and the patron to simultaneously associate with the past and break out of the mental safety zones of the past created in our brains. So back to McLuhan. He held up the flags of warning about the stifling of spiritual creativity by what he called the drug of electronic media. At least, he said, when one took a newspaper, sometimes several, local and national, to your favorite chair and read the news, then you had to think about it and process it and speak with neighbors about it and peers and colleagues and come to some personal conclusions about what you were reading. With the emergence of radio and then television and then cable news and then internet, now we're told what to think about the news. And we predetermine what we want to be told by deciding what medium, what channel, what website to allow into our consciousness. So creativity, in a spiritual sense, that ability to smash time together, pull from the past, be in the present, create the future, and design a completely new, fresh frequency, is stifled by the mortification of the brain's thinking power and by our myelinated structures that we must crack in order to really reach a creative space. If you have creativity in your invisible garment, you must literally take charge of your head brain. Discipline your mind. Make a spiritual practice out of information gathering so that original ideas can find their way in. Okay, now it's time to talk about knitting. Creativity in knitting is a little tricky to discuss because some could say that any knitting is creative, and there's a truth to that. One must pick out the yarn and pick up the pointy sticks and cast on and create something. However, I have a little bit higher standard than that for the term creativity. I'm looking, I guess, for spiritual knitting. To simply follow instructions in a written pattern is not what I would call creativity at work. That's imitation. Now, there's nothing wrong with following instructions. It's like working your spiritual practice. There's nothing wrong with learning from spiritual masters. Practice, practice, practice the basics. Master them. Then creativity has access to you and through you. Knitting from a pattern is how the myelinated structures get formed. And creativity cannot really occur until after the basics are mastered. I'd even go so far as to say that writing your own pattern isn't always creativity at work. Let me give you an example. I was at a store recently. I tried on a sweater. I loved this sweater. It was so great. You could wear it right side up, upside down, inside out, and inside out, upside down. And every way that you put it on, it looked slightly different and it could be dressed up in so many different ways. It was one of the most, quote, creative things I'd ever seen. So I loved the sweater. I hated the price. It was really expensive. So I looked at it carefully and I decided, you know what? I think I can make that. The main body of the sweater is made out of a combination of two different yarns. One is has a lot of silvery, metallic-y look, and the other is just, you know, black cotton wool blend. And then all around the edge of the sweater is about a foot of lace work. And so around the edge, the bottom, the top, is all this lace work. And so it makes for a collar and a, a hanging thing down at the bottom. And then when you turn it upside down, it's a much shorter sweater, but it still has all this lace work, but the upper collar is much bigger. It's kind of hard to describe, but anyway. Loved the sweater. So I found a book called Reversible Knitting. It is the best knitting book I've ever owned. And I looked in it and I figured out how to make the basic inside out, upside down body of the sweater. And then I just figured out what kind of lace pattern I wanted to use and I started knitting. I'm in the process of knitting the sweater. I love the sweater. I love the process of knitting the sweater. Could be my most favorite sweater ever. But It's not what I would call a result of the principle of creativity, because the only idea in this whole process that was mine was to copy someone else's fabulous idea. The reason I wanted to talk to you about this sweater is not to claim creativity for myself or in my own process, but to tell you that this sweater was not like any other sweater I had ever seen. I'd never seen a sweater that you could wear right side up, upside down, and inside out, and inside out, upside down, and have it look divine and different in every configuration. And so then when I went to look for a way to do that, how do you make armholes so that you can wear the sweater right side up and inside out and upside down? I found this book. It's called Reversible Knitting. I mentioned it earlier. Reversible Knitting by Lynn Barr. This is creativity wending its way through the consciousness of a knitter. If you get a chance, take a look at it. Even if you just go to knitpicks.com and pull it up and look at it online. Lynn Barr has created a whole bunch of stitches that look as interesting on their wrong side as they do on their right side. So half of the book is just showing you how to make stitches that are reversible so that they look interesting on both sides. She has patterns in this book where you make a dress and you can wear it inside out or right side out. And it is completely different and vitally interesting on both sides. Now, rather than create all the patterns, though, she, in generosity, included patterns from many other knitters. So the second half of the book is full of patterns from creative knitters using these stitches that look as good worn inside out as they do the, quote, right way. This book inspires creativity. Now, to the politics of ethical behavior. So far, I've referred to the artist as the doer of creativity, but now let's talk about you as a decision-making, problem-solving, day-to-day, living individual who allows creativity to flow through your decision-making process. It's like diving into the computational aspect of the principle. Each of us lives in what could be called a hierarchy of values. Not a set of predetermined behaviors, but definitely a set of pre-constructed, pre-learned, pre-crystallized attitudes that influence our behaviors. Some are original with us, but most are the result of being socialized by our culture. To be a truly creative thinker and to make truly creative decisions, you have to be willing to look at your choices and ask yourself honestly, why did I make that choice? Where did the belief system come from that influenced that choice? And was that choice based on a comprehensive view of reality or of a bias that I contain in my own thinking process? Creative decisions are decisions made outside the box. Let me give you an example. A few times recently, I have talked to people who have bought new cars, and they explained to me that the reason they decided not to buy a hybrid car was because it would take, I'm just pulling these numbers out of my head, but it's something like 6 years to pay for the extra price of a car vis-a-vis the fuel savings that they would get. So in other words, the extra price of a hybrid over the price of a regular car, let's say you're talking about a Civic, the extra cost of a Civic is say $4,000, and it would take 6 years of saving on gas to pay back that extra $4,000. So it becomes very clear that this decision was made on a very old mind, old school, oil-based, capitalistic-based lie that's woven into the system. It doesn't take into consideration that the primary reason for driving a hybrid car is because it doesn't emit toxins into the air. We don't think that way because we think capitalistically. Another example, I have a girlfriend who lives out in Topanga Canyon in California, and she has a great house up on a hill. And she and her husband installed a windmill in their yard. Now, I don't know all the facts around it. I don't know who paid for the windmill. I don't know exactly how that all worked. What I know is that because they have a windmill in their yard, they sell the power that that windmill generates back to the city, and then the city deducts that from their energy bill. And their energy bill has gone down to $20 a month. Now, we believe that we have to continue being addicted to oil-based energy. It's just not true, especially in our cities. We have the grid work to use wind energy. We have the grid work to use solar energy. But for some reason, we believe that it's complex and that it just can't be done. It can be done. It can be done fairly easily. And given what has just happened in the Gulf of Mexico with the greed for drilling for oil, we really, really must reconsider the lies that are woven into our systems and begin to make creative, ethical decisions. I want to thank you so much for all the feedback that I've gotten from you. Some of you may not know that for the past few months, I've kind of taken a sabbatical. I've been in the silence. I've been allowing my mind and my thoughts and my own creative system to flow a little bit and to grow a little bit. And I just apologized in a big email to everybody on my Turtle Dreamers email list about being so silent and being so absent. And I got nothing but support. Just email after email after email of people supporting, encouraging, welcoming silence. I really appreciated that. I really appreciated hearing from you how much the work that I do share helps you and inspires you and gives you ways, avenues into your own wisdom. And I also really, really appreciated your patience and your kind, "I'd love to hear another podcast as soon as possible, but I'm willing to wait" kind of attitudes. Thank you so much. As always, thanks to Kevin Brennan for the music. Be sure to visit his website and purchase his music at his website, www.fboo.com. That's F as in Frank, boo as in boo-boo. The link for the creativity newsletter will be in the program notes for this podcast. Please notice that I've changed the way I post the podcasts. When you go to turtledreamers.com and click on podcasts, you'll see a menu of all of them. On the page that contains the podcast notes, there's an opportunity to make comments, so please use this link liberally. We love the comments. We love the discussions that evolve from them. Also on the Turtle Dreamers website homepage, please notice the donation button. If you like these podcasts and would like to help me bear the expense of making them, your donations are mightily appreciated. Any amount, no matter how small. And while you're at the website, be sure and visit the free dream space and see what we're dreaming into existence this week and contribute your own dreams and thoughts. Also, all of my books and products are available through the website, so click on the store and check it out. Now for our surprise ending. I want to thank Sean Marmelow for this song from his album Troubadour. As always, I got this song from www.podsafemusic.com. Sit back now and enjoy Change Your Head.
Well, it's a long road to the end, yeah, but it's a hell of a wild ride. If you refuse to ever bend, yeah, well, then your life won't reach the sky. Without a wall and the clouds start to fall and the squall lines up ahead. Pursue your face and a storm that's a threat and the sunshine in your head. Oh,
special catastrophe awaits you every night and baby. When you find the ability to make your dreams take life, then you'll be there. Oh, can you feel it, baby? If you wanna change your life, just change your head. Trust the universe to be your guide. Change your head. Change your head. Oh, yeah. See, I was lonely. I was lost. Yeah, well, I was in over my head. Now I was stomping my soul to death. But my body was over.
Until next time, sweet dreams.